Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Dunaway here in the studio with my co-host Dean Welty, and today we're going to be talking about rights of conscience and some of the ways those rights are under assault right now across the nation. What makes this particularly timely today are two recent actions by the Trump administration aimed at increasing the level of protection for Americans who seek to live out their beliefs in a world that is increasingly hostile to them. Now, I don't think anyone would dispute that the First Amendment to our Constitution, protecting, among other rights, the right of individuals to freely exercise their religious beliefs, is one of the core components that has made America both great and good. To underscore this, I'd like to quote from a U.S. Supreme Court opinion issued way back in 1965, where the court said this: "Both morals and sound policy require that the state should not violate the conscience of the individual. All our history gives confirmation to the view that liberty of conscience has a moral and social value which makes it worthy of preservation at the hands of the state." And the quote continues, "So deep in its significance and vital indeed is it to the integrity of man's moral and spiritual nature that nothing short of the self-preservation of the state should warrant its violation, and it may well be questioned whether the state which preserves its life by a settled policy of violation of the conscience of the individual will not in fact ultimately lose it by the process."
Rita, powerful. That is powerful. Yeah. That's just 52 years, 53 years ago, and you have to wonder if it was said by the same body,
yeah,
the Supreme Court of the United States, and whether they ever recall that that was their stated policy.
Yes.
Well, that's a good introduction, and it really gets us into the subject because, unfortunately, today's judges and other government officials appear to be ignoring that warning. We're seeing attacks on rights of conscience exploding across America today. And I'll give just a few examples as a reminder of what we've discussed on this program before. First of all, this 71-year-old Washington florist named Baronelle Stutzman was prosecuted and virtually driven out of business for refusing to provide a floral arrangement for a gay wedding. Another one that we've talked about, Aaron and Melissa Klein in Oregon were prosecuted, fined $135,000,
wow,
and lost much of their family-owned business when they refused to provide a cake for a gay, quote, wedding, unquote. A third one, a photographer in New Mexico. Fourth, a printer in Kentucky. On and on, B&B operators, wedding coordinators, and other business owners, both large and small, have had similar experiences across America. Then there was this elected clerk of the court in Kentucky who was actually thrown into prison. A high school football coach in Washington, fired because he prayed on the field after games. And then there was the Atlanta fire chief, also fired for expressing his privately held beliefs. The list goes on and on and on to include civil servants, school administrators, civic and charity groups, and even military personnel. And Rita, we recently devoted an entire program to discussing one of these cases that is currently pending before the same U.S. Supreme Court that you just quoted. That case is entitled Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Now, as our listeners may recall, that case is about a baker named Jack Phillips, who was charged with violating Colorado's anti-discrimination law when he politely refused to design a cake for, again, a gay wedding ceremony, even though he was willing to serve the couple any other item they might choose, and even refer them to other bakeries where they might get the product they want.
And that's really an important point that the other side tries to gloss over and bury. They like to talk about it as he refused to serve these people because they were gay. Well, that is not what happened. He only refused, very politely, I might add, to design and bake a wedding cake for their ceremony. He offered to serve them. He was happy to serve them any other type of cake or any cake that was already in his shop. So it's important to get that straight.
Well, and Rita, that was the same with the florist in Washington, the cake maker in Oregon. These were longstanding customers.
Yes.
They had come in many times and been served with courtesy.
Yes.
But then they made a big issue out of this because they wouldn't participate in this ceremony that violated their religious beliefs.
It's important to keep that at the forefront because it's an important distinction that the other side wants to obscure. Now, one of the most disturbing aspects of the battle over rights of conscience in modern-day America is this. Despite the fact that the Constitution protects individual religious liberty in black and white language, clear as can be, while it says nothing about sexuality, abortion, or what some have referred to as sexual liberty, many people today consider sexual rights to warrant a higher level of protection than religious freedom and rights of conscience.
Rita, this is sort of a side trail, but it reminds me of the court's decision on the sanctity of life, which is clearly stated in the Constitution, but there is no similar reference to the right of privacy that would trump that right to life. Yeah. They just make it up.
And again, that right of privacy that they were talking about is all tied up with the general classification of these sexual rights.
Yes. It's very disturbing, Rita, but very much a reality as we've just described. And here's another example, and it sort of goes back to the spirit of what drives this whole agenda. There's an Equal Employment Opportunity Commissioner named Hy Feldblum, and we've referred to her before, who once stated in an interview that in cases of conflict between religious liberty and sexual liberty, I quote, "I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win over sexual liberty," even though, as you mentioned, sexual liberty is not mentioned in the Constitution.
Well, it's shocking to just listen to that statement and think about really what it means. But tragically, what we see in EEOC and court rulings across the country today is that Feldblum's view is widely shared. That is the belief that has led to the horrific results in the cases you recited a moment ago. Another way it manifests and has done for a long time now is in the context of healthcare, and I'm talking about healthcare providers. The subtle oppression, well, sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle, of healthcare providers as they seek to practice their profession with clear consciences is a shockingly real and common phenomenon. Let me give you some examples. In 2010, Nassau University Medical Center disciplined 8 nurses for raising objections to assisting in abortions. 12 nurses in New Jersey alleged that their hospital required them to assist in abortions and disciplined a nurse who raised a conscientious objection to the practice.
Well, Rita, this is an area that we really haven't addressed before. We've talked about florists and photographers and bakers, but this medical area, and just to bear this out, in a 2009 survey conducted by the Christian Medical and Dental Association, 39% of its members reported being subjected to pressure or discrimination from administrators or faculty based on their moral, ethical, or religious beliefs. That's over one-third of its members. And this trend is having an effect then on how people of faith make their career choices. Around 20% of medical students have indicated that they would not pursue a career in obstetrics or gynecology because of their concerns about facing discrimination and coercion to violate their religious beliefs. How sad.
Yeah, and Dean, their concerns are well-founded. In 2016, the American Congress of Obstetrics and Gynecologists reaffirmed a prior ethics opinion stating, and I quote, "In an emergency in which referral is not possible or might negatively affect a patient's physical or mental health, providers have an obligation to provide medically indicated and requested care regardless of the provider's personal moral objections." End quote.
Well, Rita, it's interesting how people are able to justify this kind of abuse.